When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
One goal to win the title. It's as simple as that. Could it happen? Balotelli, Aguero!
And Mo Farah's coming down the straightway, and he's going to be attacked by Debra Meskel, and Mo Farah's got the double! He's the Olympic champion again.
Two to win. It's got to throw, it's got to go to the keeper's end. He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins! By the barest of all margins!
Hello and welcome to the Barest of Margins podcast with me, Simon Hughes. This is the programme that delves deeper into the world of sport to hear from the coaches, scientists, trainers, psychologists, managers and athletes themselves to find out how they unearthed and implemented those vital marginal gains that engineer the difference between success and failure. Many of these strategies will be as equally applicable in the workplace as they are on field or track. Today, our guest is the groundbreaking and World Cup winning England one-day captain Owen Morgan, to coincide with the announcement of his retirement from international cricket. I first met Owen as a shy 16-year-old feeling his way into the English professional game after growing up in Dublin. It may have been just a benefit match for Middlesex against a Buckinghamshire club side, but I was immediately struck by his self-assurance and obvious talent as he struck the winning runs, a huge six, into a distant tree. He soon showed ingenuity as a batsman for Middlesex and later England, inventing all manner of reverse sweeps and scoop shots to exploit Lord's ground's unusual topography. Long straight boundaries at Lord's and short square ones, and of course it's on a slope as well, so his ingenuity was really valuable. But of course, it's as an adventurous, clear-thinking, calm and clairvoyant captain that he's really come into his own, devising a fearless, avant-garde and compelling strategy for one-day cricket that made England trailblazers and ultimately champions of the world for the first time, even if it was, to quote Ian Smith's memorable commentary line, by the barest of margins. It was an appropriate description in a way, as Morgan's innovative approach was at least partly based on the systematic application of statistics and data, and he tells us in this interview how it was done. But he starts by explaining why England is now blessed by so many exciting and aggressive young cricketers, the very reason he's decided to step down.
We're very, very fortunate. I think we have a lot of young, talented white ball cricketers in our country that do unbelievably well. And probably the last two or three years, we've really seen guys go and travel outside of our shores and, you know, really test themselves, become key overseas players in the likes of the Big Bash, the Pakistan Super League, the Caribbean Premier League. They've gone away, and the 6 months that you'd normally spend in an indoor school, say for me in Finchley, not making any mistakes, trying to groove a technique and work on your game, opportunities now around the world are making young cricketers better because they're making more mistakes earlier and they're able to learn a lot more about their game. And by the time they get to playing to international cricket, they've played in front of big crowds. They've played every game on TV because that's the nature of T20 cricket now. And I think it's fantastic. I think it's brilliant. It wasn't around when I was coming through at Middlesex or for the first few years, certainly. But the opportunity to go and to apply your skill under pressure is great. And I think it's great for the game. I think it's a really good thing that there is an appetite around the world to play so much cricket.
So do you look at players differently with T20 and 50 over in mind?
No, I don't think so. And the reason behind that, Yoz, I think since 2015 World Cup in Australia and New Zealand, T20 cricket and 50 over cricket has become so aligned that the type of cricket that you need to play is very, very similar. There are very few guys that would play one and not the other. I think you find certainly within our group of players, we have guys who certainly across the board, there aren't a lot of changes between the teams. Certainly when we're at full strength, there might be one or two, but it's, you know, the style of cricket now that is played around the world in order to win a world tournament is something that certainly since I've started playing international cricket back in 2009 has completely changed. Certainly the fielding, the batting and the bowling, everything has just gone up a notch in what I think is a short period of time. Go back to the 2010 T20 World Cup out here in the West Indies that we won. I thought we were one of the best sides in the tournament playing a brand of cricket that nobody else was playing. And I look back at it now and think, geez, cricket has changed so much so fast that in another 10 years' time, I'm not sure where the game is going to be.
Captaincy, you know, you always look incredibly composed, calm, you know, completely relaxed despite what's going on around you. Have you always had that? I mean, I remember you actually, I'll just tell you a quick story. I remember you at 16 playing against Chesham and sort of batting, scratching around for a few runs in a benefit game and then suddenly whacking a ball over the top for six and finishing the game. And I just thought, blimey, where's that come from? And you kind of had that, even then you seemed to have an aura of quite relaxed sort of confidence, even though you were probably very shy. But captaincy-wise, you know, have you always had that composure, do you think, or have you learned it?
I think I've learned it. I don't think it's always been there. I think I've had to work on certain things in big moments of the game. So when I wasn't captain, like finding that calmness and that rationale in the middle while you're trying to chase down a total is something that, yes, came natural to me. But if there was pressure being shifted on me as a batsman, I use a mechanism where I'd always engage with the scoreboard. So I would, in my head, I would shout out the score, I would shout out what I'm on, I'd shout out what I need, what the run rate is at, and then I'd look at the bowlers and see how many overs each bowler had left and how. So you could formulate a plan that was completely in the reality of things, regardless of what is going on around you. And that's something that I've continued to do over the years, particularly in big moments of a game, captaining out in the field. I continuously engage with the scoreboard to stay in the reality of what's actually happening, regardless of a guy ball, a good ball or a bad ball. It doesn't make a difference if it's a big six or a small six. The impact in the game is still the same. So it's something that I have worked on and I think become better at just purely by doing it over and over again and making it a habit.
Do you ever look back at games and not analyze your batting, but analyze your captaincy and your sort of your general demeanor?
All the time, every game. Again, I'm always trying to learn. I'm always picking guys' brains about decisions that they would make and why they would make them and how they made them work and why they didn't work sometimes. But also the myself and Nathan Lehman, our analyst, have communication during a game. This came in about a year and a half ago. And normally pre a year and a half ago, we would sit down and we would have meetings together. We would pick out information, the coaches that would be involved as well. We'd sort of dissect the game where we could impact the game and try and identify when the big moments would be and try and get your big players in those big moments. So that's how it would normally work. So the decisions would be left to me and Joss out on the field. When it came to reviewing what decisions I made as a captain and why, sometimes they weren't, I suppose, it wasn't an easy review system because so many decisions are being made in the game that sometimes you might have missed something. So the reason, one of the reasons we brought in this system was both to open up a line of communication with the black and white of what the numbers were and try and implement them into a game. But also when it comes to reviewing my decision, it's easier to identify why I went with it and what the situation of the game was there and then. So yes is the answer to your question. I always try and work on my game, both with the bat and as a captain, because certainly one of the things I felt before we brought in the system was that we with such a group, like an unbelievable group of talented players, and we always haven't had this, you know, ever since I've played for England, we've not had the good fortune of having an abundance of aggressive batsmen, you know, two all-rounders in every team that we select, normally two spinners at your disposal in the final 11. The challenge for me and the coaches and Nathan then is getting them in the right situation of the game. So it goes a little bit against the grain of what naturally you would feel as a captain sometimes. So say I was captaining New Year's, we played tomorrow against the West Indies and you took five for 10, man of the match, brilliant. And then 2 days later, we play against Australia. And I know that you don't match up well against Australia, even though you've taken 5 for 10. So as a captain, I don't bowl you. I potentially don't even pick you in the fixture. For me, that's utilizing the information better than we normally would, as opposed to saying, Yoz is in great rhythm, great form, he'll adapt and he'll get better. Where in actual fact, all of the information is suggesting the otherwise. And I think, you know, 10 years ago, you would have played and whatever. Yeah, and
I'm probably not done very well. I mean, it's interesting, but I actually introduced Nathan to Billy Bean, the famous character from Moneyball, recently on a Zoom call like this. And Billy Bean said, because of his work in baseball, and I don't know if you've probably read Moneyball, haven't you, seen the film, but he reckons that in the future in sport, more and more maths graduates like Nathan are going to be more influential than traditional coaches.
I agree with that to a certain extent, because in cricket and in any sport, all of the information is out there. Anybody can access it. How you implement it is the most important thing. There are 10 IPL franchises now, all worth $1 billion, all have the same information, trying to plan out a 10-year plan, all with the same aspirations. So no matter the squad each team comes with, I think the most effective and most successful will be the side who manages the transferring of information and tactics and articulating that to the players and making it work. So I agree with the use of the information is critical, but I think your most successful teams, Mumbai, Chennai, Calcutta, so Stephen Fleming, Mahela Jayawardene, and Brendan McCullum, then become the guys who implement the plan. And if they can't implement it, it's pointless. It's like any plan. It might as well be, you know, nothing, just words and numbers on a paper.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle, and I've lost 20 pounds already, and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Who is your... would you say your biggest influence as captain? Who has been your biggest influence on your captaincy?
I'd say it's Andrew Strauss. When I first started at Middlesex, he was in and around the England setup. So he would come back and play, and he wasn't captain at that stage, but even getting the exposure, watching how an international cricketer prepares, talks, articulates, trains, and ultimately leads around the group, that he's just a great sort of visual for me. And certainly then playing under him over the years, there are certainly a lot of lessons that I've learned and implemented in my own captaincy that I watched him just nail over the years. Everybody who plays under him talks about how he used to communicate to players, how on point he always was. When I became captain, I asked him, you know, what was the reason behind it, do you think? There must have been some sort of method. As an interesting answer, and an answer like it's something that I use in applying sort of my principles as a captain. And it was just, he listens. You know, a lot of captains and a lot of leaders come in and blurt out what they want and how they want it and when they want it. But choosing the time to deliver that message is more important than the message, because if people aren't listening, it's pointless. So every time you're around a bigger group or, you know, a couple of guys in a corner, lend your ear. You don't have to speak. Just listen, take in the mood, take in what's happening. So I thought that was unbelievable advice. Very simple, but on point.
I heard him do a talk once about leadership, actually, and he used the phrase leadership from behind, which doesn't quite the same as what you're saying, but sort of coaxing people and, as you say, sort of almost letting them make the decisions, kind of steering them in a direction, but then allowing them to actually make the decisions.
I'd agree with that. The best way I've heard leadership be described, everybody uses the bus metaphor of people, you need to get bums on seats, everybody going in the right direction and whatever, the leader drives the bus. The best one I've heard is actually the leader is the conductor. The leader goes around, sees everybody, takes their ticket, checks in, make sure they're going in the right direction, make sure they're in the right seat, and goes up and down the bus consistently and have a little bit of a chat with everybody, even the driver. And so I quite like that.
Conductor shows how long it is since you've been on a bus. You never see a bloody conductor. I haven't had one for 10 years. Anyway, how do you keep your batting game going when you play relatively little cricket? What's your practice philosophy?
That's a good question. I've stumbled across it, to be honest. And I had to go back to 2015 during our summer, where I took a break for 5 weeks in the middle of the summer. It had been quite a strenuous winter where I hadn't stopped playing for 7 months, and just I got sick of the side of playing cricket. And I went away, took a break, didn't hit any balls, practiced for about 3 days before a one-day series that we played against Australia. And I came and got runs. And from that moment, I've developed a level of trust within my game that I don't lose it by taking time away. And I actually come back with a fresh perspective, focusing on the simple things as opposed to playing a lot and doing things for the sake of it. So I stumbled across the method a bit, but it's continued to work for me.
I remember when you played a white ball game in about 2015 or something like that, and you got a pair at Merchant Taylors, you then threw your white pads away and hardly played a red ball game since then. Have you still got any whites?
No, I don't think I do. I think I've I'm getting to an age and a time in my life where I'm allergic to whites.
Standing out there for 4 hours.
Possibly 2 days as well.
Yeah. Do you want to coach manage, or do you, when you finished, or would you prefer to do something outside the game?
I'd like to do both. I've been doing stuff outside of the game now for a few years, which is great, but I also like being engaged in what's happening on the ground. The way I see it at the moment is I haven't seen a role within the game that I'm desperate to go for or to do, but I think the game is changing so quickly that there will be different and various jobs that come up that I could potentially like, but certainly around managing, mentoring and coaching is something that I'd like to do.
Where can England's white ball team improve? Are there some new bowlers? You haven't got Archer or Plunkett now. You know, is that the area that you're kind of almost looking for someone to come through? And if so, who might that be?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. Having gone through a full review of the World Cup, going into the World Cup, two areas of improvement that we were striving for was our power play bowling and our death bowling. Our batting had been in pretty good form going into the tournament. And if you look back at every game that we played, bar the last, we were on point. And for the 6 months leading in to the tournament, we were a little bit of victims of our own success. We didn't play in many tight games where our bowlers had been under pressure. We bowled people out for low scores and we chased them down quite convincingly. So again, it's an area of improvement that we're trying to get better at. But if you look at the injuries that we had pre-World Cup and then the injuries during the World Cup, upon reflection, we have to be incredibly proud of where we got to. I mean, going into the last four overs of a semi-final when the opposition need 58 and they only have one player that could win the game for them and he went out and did it. It's pretty unique stuff. So I would say death bowling is probably the biggest area of improvement. The thing people need to understand is it's not just a case of somebody being a good death bowler. I think batters have advanced their game at a quicker rate than bowlers have. If you go back 5 or 6 years, you could name a handful of people that would be brilliant death bowlers around the world. Whereas now, you would probably say one, which is Jasprit Bumrah. He's incredible.
Trent Bolt's
consistent.
Trent Bolt, maybe?
He's okay. Right. Okay. He doesn't have as much deception as Bumrah and as much consistency as Bumrah. But you could say Mitchell Starc, who went to the World Cup and didn't have a great time. Guy bowlers, like big name bowlers, are still getting hit.
So there's a challenge for the world's bowlers to come up with some new ways of silencing these thunderbats, as my old coach Jack Robertson used to call them. It won't be easy, of course, with so many restrictions on what bowlers are allowed to do, especially in one-day cricket. Anyway, hope you found those insights into Owen Morgan's leadership methods intriguing. He certainly had a transformative effect on English cricket and even the world game. Those harassed and stressed bowlers will particularly miss his unflappable demeanour and his wise counsel. The times he strolled calmly over to them when they were under the pump and just encouraged them to take a moment and be clear in what they were trying to achieve. Everyone will miss his reassuring presence, his clear thinking and his phenomenal ball-striking ability. Having said that, he is still intending to lead London Spirit in the 100 competition beginning in August, so we all look forward to that and hope his body stands up to it. He has been an ingenious and triumphant asset to English sport, and we should all join in thanking him for that. And no doubt he'll re-emerge in another influential role in due course. The world's his oyster, really. His career is proof that many of your dreams are attainable if you truly put your mind to it. Thanks for listening.
Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.